Our next presenter is Cade Francis, speaking on evaluating the management of bollworms in cotton.
Thank you for that introduction. Like she said, my name is Cade Francis. I'm a master's student at Mississippi State University under Dr. Jeff Gore and Dr. Angus Catchott. Just now entering my second year of research at the Delta Research and Extension Center in Stoneville, Mississippi. And my project is validating the current threshold for bollworms in cotton according to the Mississippi State Insect Control Guide. So today I'm going to start by talking about some biology of the bollworm, give you an introduction to the bollworm, and an intro to BT cotton. I will compare some thresholds from the past and current. I'll talk about my objective, give my materials and methods. I'll discuss my research, and finally conclude what we found. So the bollworm, or Helica verbosea, is in the family Noctuidae. It undergoes complete metamorphosis, which means it goes from an egg to a larval stage before it pupates and finally becomes an adult. The bollworm has multiple generations per year and is a polyphagous species, which means it has a variety of plant hosts that it will feed on. So the bollworm is known to have over 100 host plants. The early season populations tend to develop on plant species such as crimson clover. Later in the year, they'll move on to more agricultural hosts such as corn, sorghum, soybeans, and cotton. So this is just a list of cotton structures and fruiting forms for anybody that's not that familiar with cotton. It starts with the pinhead square. This square will eventually turn into a normal square. This square will produce a white flower that will stay white for one day before it starts to turn pink. The pink flower will eventually dry down and fall off as a bloom tag. This bloom tag will be replaced by a cotton boll, and this cotton boll will dry up and continue to mature. It will eventually crack open and continue to dry down until it's ready to be picked. So now, giving you an introduction to BT cotton. Boll guard cotton was introduced in 1996 using the Cry1AC protein. It was introduced to control the budworm, the bollworm, and the pink bollworm. But it was soon noticed that even though it did control the pink bollworm and the budworm pretty effectively, it did pretty poorly against high bollworm populations. So in 2003, Boll guard 2 was introduced. This uses the Cry1AC plus the Cry2AB protein to provide better control of these pests. But since then, the bollworms have become increasingly resistant to the Bollguard 2 proteins. So in 2018, Bollguard 3 was released. Bollguard 3 uses the Cry1AC plus the Cry2AB and also adds a third VIP3A protein for better control over these bollworm populations. So I'm not going to go into real detail here. It's just comparing the 2016 threshold to the 2019 threshold according to the insect control guides. And when going from 2016 to 2019, you'll see they are different. Some of those differences are the addition of an egg threshold and also going from 5% to 6% fruit damage. And of course, we have the addition of 3-gene cotton in there. And so basically what my research is going to do is look at these numbers and just make sure that they don't need to be updated any further. So now, looking at my research, my main objective is to validate the current threshold for bollworms in cotton. Basically what we're doing is comparing the egg and damage thresholds through different cotton varieties. So now, looking at my materials and methods, the study was conducted at the Delta Research and Extension Center in Stoneville, Mississippi, with a duplication in Clarksdale, Mississippi. It uses a randomized complete block design with 4 replications and 2 factors, those 2 factors being variety and threshold. For this test, we used 3 varieties, non-BT, Bollguard 2, and Bollguard 3. And for each of those varieties, we have a untreated control, a 20% egg threshold, and a 6% damage threshold plot per rep. So we sampled the entire test area weekly until we found eggs. Once the eggs were found, we checked each plot weekly for damaged eggs and live larvae. To gather this data, we visually examined 10 plants per plot using a modified whole plant search. And what this means is we check the terminal, at least 2 squares, and at least 2 bowls of each plant. So here are the total counts for non-BT plots in Clarksdale. On the x-axis, you have weeks after flower, or weeks of flower. On the y-axis, you have for the dotted line, percent damage, and for the solid lines, percent eggs. The blue lines are the untreated checks. The orange lines are the egg threshold plots, and the black line is the damage threshold plots. So here's the same chart that was just shown, except it's only looking at the damage threshold treatments in non-BT from Clarksdale. And from here forward, I'm only going to show the timings that were at or above threshold. The circles that you see are timings that meet the threshold, and the dated circles are timings that were sprayed. As you can see, at week 2 and 4, a spray was applied, but at week 3, there was no spray, and that's because diamides are not recommended to be sprayed within 14 days of each other. So here's the egg threshold treatment plot from non-BT in Clarksdale. As you can see, the numbers were low for the first few weeks until week 4. We had a spike and a spray was applied. Now on to the damage threshold treatment plots in Clarksdale from Bogart 2. And just like with the non-BT, we sprayed the damage threshold plots, 4% damage, at week 3, but not at week 4, and that's because, again, it was sprayed the week before. So now looking at the damage threshold treatment for Bogart 3 in Clarksdale, we only had one treatment that triggered. That was at week 3. You can see we did apply a spray. And so now looking at the damage comparisons in Clarksdale between the non-BT, Bogart 2, and Bogart 3 varieties for the untreated check plots. Week 2, Bogart 2 and 3 are significantly better than non-BT. At week 3, none of the varieties are significantly different. At week 4, Bogart 2 is not significantly different from non-BT or Bogart 3. But Bogart 3 and non-BT are significantly different from each other. And at week 5, the final check, you can see Bogart 2 and Bogart 3 are significantly better than non-BT at controlling bollworm numbers. So here are the total counts for non-BT plots in Stoneville. Again, the x-axis are the weeks of flower, and the y-axis are percent eggs and damage. The blue lines, again, are the untreated checks, the orange line is the egg thresholds, and the black lines are the damage threshold plots. Here we're looking at the damage threshold treatments for non-BT plots in Stoneville. Just like the non-BT in Clarksdale, we did spray at week 3 and week 5, but not at week 4, even though it was above threshold, and that's because it was within that 14-day range. So here looking at the damage threshold treatments in Bogart 2, we only had one spray that was applied, and you can see that was at the week 4, and we did not spray at week 5 again because of the 14-day period. Here looking at the Bogart 3 variety plots in Stoneville, throughout this test we had no thresholds that triggered for Bogart 3, so this is just showing the total damage and egg numbers for those plots. So here's the damage comparisons in Stoneville between the different varieties for the untreated check plots. At week 2 and 3, you can see none of the thresholds are significantly different from each other. At week 4 and 5, Bogart 2 and 3 are significantly different from non-BT. And at week 6, all the treatments are significantly different from each other. So this is showing the number of sprays that we applied for the egg and damage thresholds for each variety. It compares both locations, both Stoneville and Clarksdale. And you can see they are similar, But if you compare the two, the damage thresholds triggered more frequently than the egg thresholds did at each location. And this is what we've heard from consultants this past year, that they were hitting the damage threshold real soon, but they were never hitting the egg threshold. So here we're looking at the combined yields from Stoneville and Clarksdale. On the x-axis, there are the varieties, and on the y-axis, we have the yield of lint in pounds per acre. With non-BT, you can see there is significant difference between the different varieties, although with Bolgar 2 and Bolgar 3, it shows no significant difference compared between both locations. So with that, I would like to thank fellow graduate students, summer workers, full-time workers for their assistance, Cotton Incorporated, Mississippi State, and USDA for this opportunity and funding.